Okay, coffee sorted. That was just one of the priorities we have to get right before these events, be they coffee in the morning sessions or beer in the afternoon sessions. And seeing the folks who are in here, so to Burton, I so read how's your morning going? Is morning something else starting with a G because I'm still tired? But brand of coffee. So this coffee is from a little roaster here called Silippo. So as I've said several times before to people, and they always find it surprising, is that Australia's got like a massive coffee culture and they take it really, really seriously. And with my obvious bias, it is the best coffee in the world here. It's just so good here because it is such a serious culture thing. And I think a lot of it sort of stems back to we had a lot of sort of Greek and Italian immigration around the 60s. And a lot of these little sort of mum and pop kind of coffee shores stood up. So it's really interesting to sort of look at that culture compared to other parts of the world. So now, for example, Starbucks has been an absolute failure here because no one wants to go to a big American chain and drink just like huge volumes of coffee. They want to drink espressos and piccolos and things that are quality over quantity. It's okay. The Americans aren't watching at the moment. Anyway, they've got bigger things to watch. But that said, I have found some great exceptions during my travels to the US. But anyway, it's a good store because they do a lot of roasting. I bought all my equipment there and struck up a bit of a friendship with the guy who runs the place. He helped me get into the retro pie, the retro gaming pie that I've got in my daughter's room. So anyway, coffee is a big thing. Now, other big things, just before we kick into things, sponsors. So I've got to make sure the sponsors always get a shout out, particularly at this point in time, because sponsors like Orthlogix are not in a position where they can be out there with vendor stands at conferences and getting in front of people that way. So they've got to try and make sure that they reach their audience in other ways, such as digitally, like we're doing now. Stop breached and shared passwords in real time. Good point. And retroactive scanning and auto remediation. Get your free AD audit today. So one of the discussions I often have with sponsors is like, what's a good messaging to give people? And I do like to say giving stuff away is good. So go and grab the free AD password audit from Orthlogix. So big thanks to those folks for being on board today. Now, look at the comments, Mike. 216 bloody updates, not caught up in a while anyway. Something cowbell. I did actually have the cowbell up there somewhere, but I have to keep rearranging things on my shelf for a video series I'm doing that will come out later on. So I think the cowbell went somewhere else. You can update people on what the cowbell is, mate. Anyway, moving on, because I do have a bunch of stuff today, and I am doing this a little bit earlier than usual as well. So if my watch is right, it's only like 8:45 in the UK and an hour later in Norway and the other bits. But I'm doing it a little bit early because I've got a mate coming to visit. We want to go wakeboarding together, and basically I want to write off the rest of my day out on the water, going for bike ride, and then eating barbecue and drinking beer. So I don't plan on doing anything more with this later on. So I'm slipping this in before the kids' school run. Now, a lot of stuff actually this week. In fact, this is what I put on here that I did want to actually have a little chat about. I haven't mentioned how we're tracking down here COVID-wise because this does then impact things like obviously Christmas, and of course it does for everyone everywhere in the world. And part of the reason I haven't sort of given an update is that I know it's really messy in some places at the moment. So I chat to my good mate Scott Helm quite a bit and hear about lockdowns and so on in the UK as well as in other parts of the world. And it's super sucky to have to do that for anyone anywhere. And I'm very sympathetic even to Scott. Scott doesn't always deserve my sympathy. We have fun. So Australia has gone through an odd kind of, I guess, phase, and I'm just pulling the stats up on my phone here, where, like the rest of the world, things started getting messy earlier on in the year, and it peaked, and everyone was like, okay, we've got to stay at home and self-isolate and distance and all the rest of it. And then it all started coming back down. Everyone was like, glad we sorted that out. And then the Victorians, which is our southernmost state, had a massive second wave, and it really, really spiked much worse than the first wave. And I'm going to talk about where they are a bit in the moment, but just for perspective, for folks that haven't been to Australia, even for me, I'm still realizing how freaking big it is. And part of the reason I'm realizing relates to my Christmas driving plans. I'll talk partly about in a moment. But just for a bit of perspective, we are about 8 times the size of the UK in this state alone. This state is twice the size of Texas. So, you know, when you hear Americans again, not meaning to just keep picking on you, and I'm conscious this is a time zone which is friendly to the American audience too, but how Americans will be like, you know, as big as Texas kind of thing. It's like, yeah, that's like half the size of this state, and this isn't our biggest state by a long way either. So it's a huge, huge, huge amount of space. And then we've only got 5.1 million people in it. So our population density is really, really small. And I think that has had a lot to do with the fact that our rates of COVID here have been exceptionally low. We have had six, like the number six, one single digit death over the entire period. And from memory, all high risk in terms of elderly and so on as well, which is still tragic. However, the numbers are amazing given the size of the place. Now, it's probably about 1,500 kilometer drive to get down to Victoria where they had the second wave. And they locked down pretty hard when it all kicked off. But they're now doing exceptionally, exceptionally well to the point where their numbers are lower than what they've ever been during this pandemic. Now, certainly when I go back through the stats that are here. So that is fantastic for them because it means that they start to get to travel to other states, which had locked them all out because of the way things had gone. And when I look at the state of Victoria now, so it got to the point where they're, how many active cases? Oh, this is just the change. No, here we go. They're up around 7,000. Where did they peak at? Almost 8,000 active cases in the first half of August. Their active cases as of yesterday is 20. So they just massively, massively smashed it out of the park, which is, it was a really, really shitty time for people there, no doubt. But they're doing exceptionally well. The state between us, New South Wales, they've had a little bit of an uptick, certainly not Victorian level scale, but they've actually got 41 active cases at the moment. So obviously they're trying to suppress that. Everyone, and I'm sure it's the same in your parts of the world, everyone is trying to get things to the point where they can like go and see their family by Christmas. So that's what's been the focus there. So for us here in Queensland, I hate to say it because it sounds enormously privileged and it is, but honestly, it's just life as normal. Nobody wears a mask. And now when I say nobody, if I was to go to a big shopping center and there would be massively sub 1% of people that might be elderly or Chinese. And I only say Chinese because very often you would see Chinese people. And I know I've just made a massive racial generalization there, but even pre-COVID, people who are more likely to wear a mask in the first place will be wearing a mask. The only time I've had to do it is going into the Apple store because Apple wants everyone to do everything the Apple way everywhere in the world. So it's just not a thing. We go out to restaurants and bars, we have to sign in, but that's it. And everything else is really perfectly normal. The only other thing I think that impacts us at all is we're going to have a Christmas party here later on in the month, and we're still limited to, I think, 40 people in the house, and then that's meant to go to 50 or something like that. So it's just normal. Now, because of that, we're sort of thinking, let's go and do something for Christmas, and we're just going to do a big driving trip north. So when you look at the size of this state, we're going to a few different places further north. We'll talk about them in more detail another time. But it's like, okay, so it's a day's drive to this spot and we'll spend a bit of time there. Then it's another day's drive up to there and a bit more time and another day's drive up to there and a bit more time. But not having time pressure sort of helps. And knowing that no matter where we go, that the numbers here in this state are basically, for all intents and purposes, zero. Every active case, there hasn't been any community transmission in this state for a very long time. And any of the cases that are there are normally like interstate traveler in home quarantine, or we do still have some international flights coming in, especially repatriating Aussies. So we're very, very lucky. I don't mean to make it sound awesome here while everyone else is suffering in other parts of the world, but I do get asked a lot, what's it like? So this is what it's like at the moment. Okay, let's have a look at these comments just here. Is it a self-made cappuccino? It is a self-made latte that is here. So with the proper full and espresso machine. If people are interested, it's an Expo Bar Minoir 4 with a Quama grinder as well. Makes good coffee. So the coffee is great. Looking at other folks chiming in here. Christian, when I was young, I actually planned to travel down under. So part of what I'm going to do with this Christmas holiday, and it's going to actually be a bit of an epic road trip in multiple parts, is I want to see parts of Australia that I've never seen before. And in fairness, even before the whole COVID thing, I just wanted to stay in Australia as much as I could this year. So fix that, didn't we? But my goal was, like, I want to stay in Australia. I want to see places I haven't seen. Like, I've never been to the Northern Territory, which is where all the crocodiles are, for international viewers. Haven't been to Tasmania, which is all the way down the bottom, the little island off the bottom where the whiskey distilleries and things like that are. I've never been to South Australia. And frankly, I've only just been around the fringe of the East Coast down to Melbourne, and I've been to Perth a couple of times, and that's it. And there's just like this massive place I haven't been. I can pick like a map of Europe or the US and I've got dots all over the place, but here, not so much. So I'll be doing a lot more of that. Okay. So Ben just looked up, Australia is as large as the US. Wow, I had no idea. Yeah, so this is the amazing thing. I mean, people do not have a sense of just how large it is. It is slightly smaller than the US, which is slightly smaller than Canada, which is a lot smaller than Russia. I think Australia is the fifth largest country in the world. It's smaller than China as well. But our population density is something like 2-point-something people per square kilometre, because there's just absolutely no one in the middle and we're just all right around the fringes. So it's funny also just figuring out this driving holiday. You look at the map and you go, oh, yeah, we'll go from there to there. And then it's 1,100 kilometres and you're like, ah, oh, shit, 1,100 kilometres is a lot. I wonder if we can break it up in half. Everything in the middle looks like somewhere I'd be murdered. So, no. So, part of my plan, one of these days of driving, is like, it's just going to have to be an 1,100 kilometer day. But it's all open road. It's all 100 k an hour, 110 k an hour. We used to have no speed limits in some parts of the country, namely the Northern Territory, which would be really nice in that E63 AMG, which I will be taking, but no, so they're limited to 130 and only in parts now. So it's basically just like roads that sometimes are 200 kilometers long and just straight. So I think it's going to be like radar cruise control, lane assist. I will take podcast suggestions in advance. Question about what watch I'm using. I'm using an Apple Watch Series 4. So it's the one that's two generations old. The larger one. I have the latest one, the 6, on order. I've bought it, and every time I look at the delivery stuff, it's like 6 to 8 weeks. Now, it said 6 to 8 weeks about 6 weeks ago when I ordered it as well. I ordered it at launch day. Maybe it was 4 weeks ago. But anyway, it's not updating. So I assume that a new one will arrive at some time. And I use this thing so much as well, because I'm every single day tracking, particularly exercise. Still closed all my rings for every day since, I don't know when, it's 210 days ago, something like that. Cloudflare's earnings call in 10 minutes, please beat estimations. Well, that's up to them. Unfortunately, I don't have any Cloudflare shares. I'd like to, because I think they'd do a good thing. But anyway, all right, just going to skim through these quickly before we move on, because we're going to need to get onto the other things. I do have a few other things, actually. Robert Pascal says mask mandatory here in Melbourne. So Melbourne is the capital city of Victoria, the state that had the outbreak. So yes, that's understandable given those circumstances. And again, Robert, I'm sure it's been pretty miserable for you the last few months as well, but it's so awesome just to watch those stats each day and just see those double donuts coming up each day lately. So good on you guys for that. Okay, I'm up to speed here. Burton, am I recording the journey with my GoPro? It's going to be too much journey to try and do all that, but I'll be doing loads and loads of photos and things like that. Ben Jacobs, reply all podcasts are great. Yeah, I know, I've been on it. In fact, that's how I discovered it was great. Not because I was on it, but I get asked to do podcasts and stuff all the time, and I'm usually like, yeah, sure, I'll be fine. You know, I don't know who you guys are, but I'll do it. And I did the reply all one, and I suddenly started getting all these people going, oh, I heard you on Reply All, like, it was a really awesome show. I was like, oh, I probably should actually listen to this. And then, yeah, they're right. It's a really awesome show. So I'm a regular listener now as well. Okay. Yeah. So the one that I was on was, I think it was The Russian Passenger. Or was it that one? They're trying to figure out how someone's Uber account got taken over. So check that one out, or Google Reply, or my name. All right. Other things. I hosed my network, my Ubiquiti network. Now, I'm still deciding whether I write this up or not, and I'm still chatting with Ubiquiti about exactly what went wrong and how things should have been better to not make it happen again. But here is the chronology in my tale of woe. So we've gone over to my parents' house. Bear with me. There's a story here. Gone over to my parents' house. Must have been, yeah, I think it must have been out Friday. So Charlotte, my partner, and I, we've driven over there, park at their place. I've gone in, seeing mum and dad, and it's like, where's Charlotte? She's still in the car. Anyway, going back out, it's like, what's up? Can't find her phone. I was like, okay, that's all right. We have the technology. She's got an Apple Watch. She pushed the little dingy thing, and then the phone will ding, and you'll find the phone. Job done. It's fine. Watch can't see the phone. So she's like, okay, can't see the phone. It uses Bluetooth, so it's outside of Bluetooth range. And then I'm thinking, did I accidentally take it inside? And I'm like, I know how to fix this. I set up Amplify for my parents. So I took out my phone. I went to their Amplify network, and I thought, I will see her phone on the network because she's on their Wi-Fi. Can't see it there. So, okay, let's go up to the third option now. I will take out the Find My Friend feature, which we both allow for each other, and I will find you on here, and I will see where your phone is because maybe you left it at the shops, which we stopped at on the way. Pull out the phone. It shows that Charlotte is in the same location as me. And then I'm like, well, is it that? Or could her watch now be broadcasting location? Because it always only used to be the phone. You couldn't get your watch to broadcast location, which was stupid because if you leave the phone at home and go out for a run, it doesn't work. And I knew that iOS 14 had added this feature where you can now set up a kid's watch on your device and track their location without them needing a phone. So obviously the watches alone, if they're 3G enabled, are able to broadcast location. So anyway, it's showing she's it with me. So now she's spinning out because she's like, I've lost like an expensive phone at the shops or something. So we drive back to the shops. And while I'm driving, I'm like, I know how to fix this. Maybe you left it at home. So I will pull out my phone. I will open up my Ubiquiti app and I will see all the devices connected to the network at home. And if your phone is on there, job done. And I'm like, I can fix anything with technology, right? So this will be the fix. Pull up the Ubiquiti app, won't load. It's just failing. So I'm like, oh, great. All right. I will pull up. I wonder if I could pull up the Home Assistant app and see that your device is still at home because Home Assistant can track where the person is. And I was getting like inconclusive results from that. So we end up driving home and she finds her phone straight away because she's left it at home. But I'm like, what the hell's wrong with my network? Long story short, I couldn't get into the admin interface at all. I went and ended up just rebooting it via the device itself, and the TFT on the UDM Pro comes up, and it's like, you need to go and do a restore. Like, oh, geez. So what I think happened is several days earlier, I started getting warnings about capacity, and I went through and I reduced the logging cycles, and I thought, okay, that will fix it. I suspect it didn't fix it. I don't think it purged the logs. This is only anecdotal evidence, but I suspect that it just ran out of capacity and somehow bricked itself, rebooted it. It wanted to then go through and do a restore of firmware, which would basically put it back to factory settings. And I've got like 100 different devices in the house that have all been named and they've got icons and all this sort of thing. And the problem then is that, yes, it's been backing up locally onto the device. I had not taken an external backup from the device. Backwards and forwards with Ubiquiti, basically, look, the state is in at the moment, you won't be able to retrieve the backup, which was an absolute freaking nightmare, if I'm honest. So part of it's my fault because I didn't take that backup external to the device. And I should have. I mean, we all know this, right? And I'm happy to admit that I've cocked it up. You know, I should have taken that backup externally. So anyway, I had to go and restore firmware, reset the whole thing up, and then began a series of other problems. Number one, when I set it up to begin with, it wanted to use 192.168.0 subnet. although my previous cloud key had been on .1. And I was like, ah, who cares? We'll just do .0. And then I find all the things that have got static IP addresses, and now they're on a different subnet and they're difficult to access, but possible. When I set it up again this time, it wanted to do .1 again. And I was like, all right, we'll go back to .1. That's fine. But then just accessing things like the Raspberry Pi, which has got a static IP address, was a pain in the ass. This is for the Pi hole. One of my NAS devices had a static IP, which it didn't need to have. So getting back into that, my Home Assistant implementation, because you've got to have in the IP address of things like the Nano Leaf, and in fact also these LEDs up here, all those IP addresses had to change too. The what else broke? The Philips Hue, I think, has the IP address of the hub. So that broke as well. My MQTT implementation within Home Assistant, the Shellys that were using MQTT had a hard-coded IP address for the MQTT server. That broke as well. And then it was just a cascading series of problems from there. It was stuff like we're out waiting to go into an appointment one day, and it's like, oh, yeah, shit, the groceries are coming. That's fine. I've got the technology on my wrist just to open the garage door. Bam, open the garage door, job done. Get a call from Woolies. It's like, your door's not open. We can't deliver the food. We can't leave it there. So now you don't have food. And it didn't work because of the Shelly that controls the garage door with MQTT server hard-coded to the IP address of the old the old subnet. And I was just absolutely despairing. So I spent most of my Sunday reconfiguring it all, backing up externally as I went along. I did notice there's a feature in the Ubiquiti Unified Dashboard, which says something along the lines of backup your device remotely. So part of the feedback I'm going to give Ubiquiti, I'm just deciding whether I write all this up or just send them an email, is that you need to help people fall into the pit of success with this stuff. When I ran out of capacity, what should have happened is it said, you're out of capacity. Here are the things you can do right now to get capacity back. You know, purge logs, delete temporary files, remove previous versions of firmware that have been downloaded, whatever. That should have happened. That didn't happen. Obviously, it shouldn't have completely bricked itself if that was the reason why it did in the first place. So that was a problem too. The backups should have literally been like, we have a backup here. Have you downloaded this? Now, again, it's my fault for not downloading it, but had I been prompted, I think I probably would have. If there's that feature, which looks to be coming, according to the dashboard, to push it remotely to somewhere as well, I would consider that. I'd want to think about what it is that you're pushing remotely. But it just it needs to make failures like this harder, because the problem is that the network, particularly in a place like this now, is just such a critical piece of infrastructure for the entire freaking house to work, that when that fails, it's not good. Now, it's not all bad news, because as part of the rebuilding, I did optimize a bunch of stuff. So, for example, I got rid of MQTT on the garage door. That was just an unnecessary third wheel in a process where there's now a native integration for the Shellys. So I can take out MQTT servers and one other thing that can go wrong. And I was actually finding that was a bit flaky as well for various reasons I'll write up later on. So anyway, it is a bit of a tale of woe. I wasn't real happy. I blew a lot of time that was very valuable to me. So that's a discussion that I'm having very candidly with Ubiquiti. The one thing that doesn't work now is my Unify Protect, so the cameras. So it looks like I need to rebuild that, because that sort of sits separately on the same controller. And look, it's only 4 or 5 cameras, not too hard. I can deal with that, but still not real happy. Colin, oh great, I literally bought a UDM Pro today. Look, I love the UDM Pro, don't get me wrong. I love all this equipment, and I think that this was just a combination of unfortunate events. But the lesson, Colin, is back up your controller as you go along. Make sure you're doing that pretty regularly. What else is in here of substance that I can actually add something to? Sorry, that is the caveat here. Colin says, if you had multiple Gen 1 cloud keys, go to shit from firmware updates. Look, in fairness, and I don't know. It is possible I had a firmware update go wrong, and maybe it just aligned with the time that I ran out of capacity. If I had the right backups and I could have restored from that, then you're resilient to that sort of stuff. So I think it had to be a combination of things that went wrong for this to happen. All right. So, Ben, I should just send Ubiquity a link to the stream with timestamps after you're done. Look, they know everything I'm telling you. And I'm very transparent about it. Ubiquity send me a bunch of stuff for free. I talk about the stuff I like. I talk about the stuff I don't like as well. And I make this very clear to every single person that wants to do anything sponsorship-wise, whether it's monetary or sending equipment. It's like you're going to get candid feedback. And the public is going to get candid feedback as well. So with all that said, and just to finish up on that before I go on to the next thing, I do love that gear. I think it's amazing equipment. I love the way this house works. I'm just extra conscious now of how dependent I am on the network behaving, and I need to do a better job at making sure I'm resilient to unexpected outages. Okay, so moving on to other things. Loads of new breaches this week. Now, it's an interesting thing. I had a couple of people sort of say recently, oh, statistically, there's like a lot less breaches this year. You know, they're down. It's like, I don't think we have reliable enough evidence to make that assertion, not least of which because we often don't know about breaches until well after they happen, often multiple years after they happen. So whether there's empirical evidence we can use about the amount of data that is publicly released and circulating, that'd be one thing, but in terms of the number of breaches, different thing. So what's happened is there's been quite a bit of dumping of data again. Looks like a lot of Asian services as well. So, for example, I loaded in one yesterday called Wong Nai. Now, Wong Nai is a Thai delivery service. I don't mean like if I was here and I wanted to buy Thai food. I mean like if you're in Bangkok and you want to have something delivered to you. So they had 4 million people in there. MD5 password hashes, good on them for that. A little bit before that, the 4.4 million accounts from Minted, which was like an independent artist service, not an Asian service, that one. A little bit before that, 1.3 million from a Spanish online pharmacy called Pro Pharma. And then a little bit before that, we had, that was still within the last week, Minnesota News Service, Star Tribune, and then just yesterday I put in this Brazilian delivery service called James, 1.5 million accounts on that, and a bunch of others still sitting here waiting to be processed. There's another one that I did quote tweet, I think, that's a big aggregation of data, and I'm just looking up the name of this. It was like City Day, yeah, CIT Zero Day, which looks like it was another breach aggregation service that itself got breached. Shouldn't laugh. And there's just like tens of thousands of different individual incidents in there. Now, we don't know how many of those are legit or not. It looks like very curated data in terms of it being username, password pairs, and then a whole bunch of cracked hashes as well. But just a huge amount of data that's very, very broadly in circulation. And I say very broadly because multiple different people all sent me the same link and they're like, hey, have you seen this thing? So, okay, I guess that's out there. So Mike says, roughly how many breaches are you sitting on that are yet to be uploaded? Just a best guess. Honestly, mate, as a best guess, I think it's a four-figure number. Now, this includes a whole bunch of stuff that's not verified yet, but even if we just take that one incident from yesterday, and this one... it was in the news somewhere. Here you go. 23,600 hacked databases. You know what? I'll just copy this and paste this link into the chat window here. 23,600 hacked databases have leaked from a defunct data breach index site. Site archive of SIT Zero Day is now leaked on two hacking forums after servers shut down in September. So this is a piece by Catalin Kimpanu. And yeah, look, that data is out there very, very, very broadly out there. But I don't know how legit it all is. Now, what I might do is, and there's like just a little screen cap in here of a subsection of the data, rather a subsection of the file names. I might just like generate a list of all the files and chuck on a paste somewhere. The thing is that when you look at these names, I'm just a little bit cautious of putting anything out there saying, here's everything that's in this list because it implies breach. But short of any independent verification, I can't say that they were breached. But look, we'll pick an example here because it's literally in Catalin's blog post here or news article. So let's pick something that's, let's say .com. UNIONLF.com. UnionLF.com. Served over HTTP. Looks like the sort of thing that might have a data breach. Has a logon page. Allegedly, according to this piece here, there are 7,597 records in there. Now, the thing is also, for how I've been pwned, I'm not going to go through and process stuff that's like 7,000 records. There's so much stuff out there that's millions, and it's the same amount of effort, regardless of whether I process something that's 10,000 records or 10 million records. It's just not the ROI to be able to do this. Now, to be clear, when I say return on investment, it's not that I will make more money out of doing one thing or the other thing. It's that if I do the one that's 10,000 versus the one that's 10 million, it's going to have 10,000-fold more impact on the people that are in the big one, obviously, because a lot more people get notified of their breaches and become searchable. So I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to be going through this little stuff. So the only sort of middle ground I could possibly take here is just to dump everything and then upload that as one breach, and we call it the zero-day credential stuffing list or something like that. But the problem then is that let's say that there'd be 500 million email addresses in there. It would be a six-figure number of people that then get notifications from Have I Been Pwned? And then they're like, okay, great, I'm in a breach. Which one? Because unless you can tell me which one, I don't know where to change that same password that I use absolutely everywhere. So the question from Ben, how much time does it take to process and publish a breach? I would say on average, 1.5 to 2 hours, simply because it's everything from receiving the data, going, oh, what on earth is this site? Going to the browser, figuring it out, trying to find an enumeration vector where I can take email addresses and see if they exist, assuming that's right, finding a logo, loading the whole data up, writing a description, doing the tweet, doing the Facebook post, filing it away into cold storage, the whole thing, easy an hour and a half to 2 hours. So I got a lot of wakeboarding I want to do and some beer I want to drink today. So it's like, how do I fit all of these things in together? All right, so I do want to move on. And I want to talk about the blog post this week. This was interesting. Now, first of all, for the people that messaged me and said they didn't know I do guitar lessons, I did not see that response coming. I probably should have, given the title of the blog post is, if you don't want guitar lessons, stop following me. Now, this is one of these blog posts. I got a lot of these where things can be in draft form for weeks, months, even years. And I just keep dropping little bits in as time passes. And eventually there's like enough mass within the post or something happens that just triggers me enough that I'm like, that's it, screw it, I'm publishing this thing. And what was happening with this one is that time after time over the years, and particularly as I've gotten more followers and I guess more expectation of the things I should be doing, every now and then I would tweet something and someone would pop up and go, I saw you tweet this thing. I don't like this thing. Like, dude, this is my timeline. Like if you don't like this thing, you don't have to tell me you don't like it. In fact, you don't even have to follow me, because everyone should be, I think for everyone you follow, they should be looking at the person they follow and going, is the signal to noise ratio sufficient that I would like to keep seeing the things that this person tweets? If not, unfollow. Like, you don't have to tell me if you unfollow. I won't be upset. It's like my stuff is no longer relevant. Don't follow. But I find it really, really obnoxious when people pop up and tell me that I shouldn't be tweeting about something because it is not conforming with their expectation of what I should be tweeting. Now, to be clear, if it was, let's just try and pick something as an example. Let's say I was the New York Times and the New York Times is continually tweeting news. And then suddenly like the editor of the New York Times starts tweeting photos of their cat. It's like, that would be weird. I understand that. But the whole point of this blog post, and this is the top one on troyhunt.com at the moment, so you can click in and see what I'm talking about, is that my Twitter account is like my Twitter account. And I put a tongue-in-cheek image, the first image in the blog post, which is a screen cap of Twitter. And it's like, I've handwritten me. It's like, there's my photo, there's my name. Like, this is me and all the things I do. At some point in the future, I may no longer do InfoSec, or I may no longer do Have I Been Pwned? And then it's going to be all how messed up I made my IoT network or something like that. And that's what it's going to be. But it's always going to be me and all the things that I find interesting. So to be clear, before I get into more detail on this, we are talking about a sub 1% of people. And my gauge with anything I write is that if there's a tiny fraction of people that are upset and the vast majority that are happy, happy days, I'm good with that. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that if there is no one upset, I don't think I'm doing a good enough job. And I say that simply because the only way to not upset everyone is to be so bland and beige and vanilla that you just become boring. And my timeline is the things that I find interesting, and some of them will upset people. So let me give you the guitar lesson context, and then we'll talk about the things that upset people. So there's this really, really good Ricky Gervais bit. It's out of his Humanity skit. And I embedded this, and it's literally like 55 seconds long or something. And I sort of said, look, spend a minute watching this first. And in the skit, he says, he's talking about how he doesn't know who's reading his tweets. He's got like 12 million followers or something like that. He just tweets stuff and people come along and they look at it. And he said, people getting upset about what he's tweeting is a little bit like someone has a notice up in the town square. It's like guitar lessons, you know, take a little thing from here if you'd like guitar lessons. Someone walking past and seeing it and saying, profanity warning. In fact, there's going to be profanity through the rest of this because I'm pretty uppity about this. Someone walking in, grabbing the thing and saying, I don't fucking want guitar lessons. And then calling you up and saying, hey, you're doing guitar lessons. I don't fucking want guitar lessons. And like the way he does it is hilarious. And this is why I embedded it. And this is how I titled the blog post. So I think the point of looking at something that's publicly broadcast and getting in touch with the person saying that they're not interested in the thing that they're being broadcast is just ridiculous. Now, the catalyst to this was on the weekend, we went out on the water on my boat, and I took a photo. It's just like boat, blue sky. It was like, and I titled it Gold Coast Days. It looked lovely. Lots of really nice feedback on it. Now, not replying to this, but completely separately, someone says, what is this, show-off day by privileged tech leaders nowadays? There's someone else mentioned here along with me. We have pandemic and people struggling for existence, climate crisis threatening our kids' future. And we're all about planes, but I'll tell you what, mate, not many people are about planes at the moment. Planes, boats, and huge houses. Hope I'm not jealous. Or the Twitter AI, hope I'm not jealous. It does come across a bit like that. And it is just, I find this such an obnoxious thing to say, because there would always be the option of saying, I'm not interested in this. I'm just going to proceed and get on with my life and not let this burden me. There would also be the option of saying, I'm just going to unfollow this person because what they're tweeting is not actually relevant to me. Incidentally, this person still follows me. I just noticed, which I do find a bit hypocritical. And that was just one in a chain of multiple incidents like this. So I embedded one that goes back to March 2017 after I bought a Mercedes AMG. A V8, it's noisy. I like it. That's my thing. Other people like Teslas. Now, I had a little video there. Said, this is why I didn't buy a Tesla, because the exhaust sounds epic. Now, some people don't like the sound of exhaust. Some people make disparaging comments about internal combustion engines. Some people would rather ride a bike. Like, whatever. I'm not going to come and knock on your door and say I don't like your bike. But this person wanted to make a point of saying, is there a way to filter that kind of bullshit and stick to security data breach contact exclusively? I mean, seriously now. Now, I actually used that tweet in my Hack Your Career talk in 2017 as a way of saying, look, there are people who will write things on the internet that that they'll be unhappy with you, and you've just got to kind of get on with life, which I've tweeted a lot of car photos since then. So incidentally, this person did DM me, not DM me, sorry, that he was on the public timeline, replied publicly and said something, you know what, I'm going to find exactly what they said because it was a really cool response and I really respect this person for what they said. And I think it deserves calling out because as much as I'm happy to tell someone when they're being a dick, I'm also happy to say when they're being really cool. All right, this person's quote tweeted me and he said, dear Troy Hunt, thanks featuring my stupid tweet from 3.5 years ago on your blog post. I've grown a different opinion since then. I sincerely apologize to that one. Have a good one. I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I did reply to him to that effect as well. Him, her, I don't know who it is. So I thought that was a really, really cool response. There are other ones of a similar nature down here. And that the whole point over and over and over again is that this is my timeline. I'm tweeting about the things that are relevant to me. If you don't like it, you can move on and focus on something else. You don't need to be an obnoxious dick about it. Now, this got 99.something% positive feedback. There is negative feedback. Again, sub 1%. So as far as I'm concerned, if you're in the negative camp, like you are a tiny, tiny minority and you are probably wrong, as you know, upset people even more now, as it relates to the public consensus about the blog post. So here are the negative feedback. Where's the guitar lesson? So I think you probably should have watched the video. There were a couple of people that said it was harassing by embedding the tweets of other people. Now, the irony of the harassing nature of particularly a couple of these tweets from the individuals who tweeted them in the first place aside, actually not aside, like that is ironic, isn't it? So I get some of these tweets, you know, one of them in particular here is just really super obnoxious, and you can use your own judgment to figure out which one that is. To then say, look, if someone tweets something really obnoxious at you and you publicly, and then you say, here's a really obnoxious public tweet, that somehow that is the harassing thing, is just absolute arse about. If you put stuff on the public timeline, you're accountable for it. And all of us are, right? Like anything you put there on the public timeline, you've got to expect will be there for life. I have this discussion with my children, for God's sake. It's like, mate, every time you put something on the internet, it's always going to be there. There's this thing called archive.org. It will pick everything up. And you've got to work on the assumption that even if it doesn't, someone will screen cap it and it will be there for life. So I don't have an issue with that. Now, as far as I could see, there certainly weren't any pile-ons or anything like this on the people who said they weren't happy with what I was tweeting. But these tweets were really important context. And the blog post would have lacked so much punch if I just said, oh, there are some people out there who tweet some stuff that's not very nice, and I just left it at that. It's much more impactful to say this is the context of what I'm talking about. And in the case of the individual I just gave the example of, the guy who then, guy, girl, whoever it was, it's a cartoon character avatar, who tweeted me. It's like, well, this is actually handled exceptionally well. And as a result of this, you look even better for tweeting that. Not me, the other person. So I honestly just don't have any patience for people saying that when someone's being a dick to you online, you shouldn't highlight the fact that they're being a dick to you online, because the solution to this is not being a dick online in the first place. All right, glad I got that off my chest. Let me see the comments here. yeah, now Mike makes the comment here, Juntaloven. So Juntaloven is really interesting. I can explain to Christian now, who's asking if he's Norwegian, where that comes from. So Juntaloven, or the law of Junt, is, I don't think it's just Norwegian, but it's like a Scandinavian term. I think the guy was originally from Sweden. What was his name? It's literally in the talk I do. I'm just going to embed the talk in here and you can watch it later on. But basically it's like living simply. So I don't think it's necessary. I'll just Google this. Juntaloven. Juntaloven. Law of Junt. Here we go. The law of Junt, Danish. All right, I was close. Is a literally element that has been as it characterizes not conforming, doing things out of the ordinary, or being personally ambitious as unworthy or inappropriate. So basically like living simply, not being showy or anything like this. So in my talk about hacking your career, which I'm going to link to momentarily, here it is, hack your career. I'll link to the first one I did in Oslo, dropping that into the comments just here. I sort of made the point that I got to try and find a balance. In fact, when I showed this, I showed a tweet of when I moved into this house, which is a nice house. And I said, look, I'm trying to find the balance. So how do I share things that are important to me in my normal life that are just part of my normal life? Try and, I guess, to some extent be inspirational, but then try also not to be obnoxious about it. So I could tweet a photo of the car, one of the cars, but they're very nice and they're expensive. Like, is that obnoxious and should I not do that? Or because it's just part of my normal everyday life and it's something I take pleasure in, should I do it anyway? And I try and find my balance. Honestly, there's a lot of stuff I do which I think twice about sharing, a lot of stuff I don't end up sharing. But I just don't have the patience for people saying, I am unhappy to see your pleasure in something, or I am unhappy because you have been successful, or whatever measure they want to put on it. It's just, if you want to be miserable, go and be miserable. And this whole thing in terms of the original tweet about it's pandemic and everything, and maybe you shouldn't be sharing this, and climate change. like, there are plenty of places on the internet you can go and be miserable, but my timeline isn't one of them. Hmm. And as the comments here say, how dare you be happy, Bad Troy? Now, Rambling Geek says, UBU, which is pretty much where we're at, right? And this was the constant theme throughout the responses. In fact, in my notes here, I said, the best comment I've had so far is fuck the haters. So, yeah, okay, I think that's pretty fair. And a lot of it was just UBU, do what you do. And to be very objective about it, and to finish on a non-negative note, if it's not for you, if my balance is out of whack, if you'd like to see more InfoSec stuff than what you see, or if you'd like to see less of, you know, the photos or the beaches or whatever it may be, then just unfollow. Like, it's so easy. There's a little button. You can even mute. Like, what if your friends are retweeting my stuff and you're like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing happy people. I don't want to see happy people anymore. Just mute me and you won't see me being happy. The other thing, just while I think of it as well, and I think my social media profiles are a pretty candid representation of the things that I'm doing in my life, but I'm conscious that for most people, their social media profiles always pick up the things that are positive in their life and aspirational and the enjoyable moments. And then there's the darker stuff or the hard work or the miserable things or the times I literally spend all night like sitting here doing other things in order to be able to do what I do that don't go into social media. So all of us sort of portray what we want to portray, and there's another whole piece, which is the less glamorous stuff and the things that other people I don't think are particularly interested in that doesn't go on the timeline. So I think we all do sort of skew the public perception a little bit. It's not to say I got some big dark secret or something like that, but like there is a lot of hard work and a lot of really, really boring shit that goes on behind the scenes, which just simply doesn't end up on the timeline. I think everyone knows that though. All right, looking at the last comments here, Ben, I have two Twitter accounts. I'm sure as many people do. One focused on gaming, the other focused on tech stuff. It's good solutions for me, but honestly, I couldn't have kept them together. So a few people suggested this. They said, look, why don't you have like one photo, which is like Troy's legs in the pool, you know, and boats and beaches and stuff, and another, which is just the InfoSec. For me, my professional niche ties in very personally with, or ties in very closely with my personal life insofar as there is a whole me, and there's a bunch of stuff I do around InfoSec stuff and increasingly the IoT things and all this kind of thing. And there is my personal life as well. And I like the fact that when I meet people, of course I meet them all on camera these days, they're aware of all of this stuff as well. And they're meeting me as a person and not me, if I take that New York Times example from before, as just a feed of purely bland, vanilla work stuff. So that's the way I've decided to approach it. I don't want to separate these two things because I am one whole person, just in the same way as I'm not separating out the IoT stuff into another account from the security stuff. That just does not work for me. Burton's asking about Guy Fawkes Night. Interestingly, I remember as a kid Guy Fawkes Night being a big thing where we'd have a bonfire and use sparklers and things like that. And going far back enough, I think before I was born, there were fireworks and things like that. But yeah, as someone else says here, not really a big thing. No more coffee. I like when someone shows that they aren't just one thing. We humans do many things, family fun. And look, I think particularly at the moment, in these strange times, people do enjoy seeing what life is like in other parts of the world. Now, when I do go on this big trip over the Christmas period, I'm going to post a lot of stuff. It's probably going to be more personal stuff than anything else, but maybe it'll be like a photo a day or something like that. You'll be able to deal with it. But I want to share that because I think other people find it interesting, particularly at a time where we are stuck at home a bit. I certainly find it interesting looking at at the things that some of my some of the people I follow post that are not related specifically to their domain. All right. Look, I think we're pretty much up to date there, folks. It is getting very close to school drop-off time. I've managed to slip this in beforehand, which is awesome. So I'm going to edit this up when I come home and publish it all. Thank you very much for watching. Next week, I will come to you at the other end of the day. I'm still trying to get GoPro working the way I want as a webcam. I need to get it working before I go away so that I can do all of this with hopefully some standard of quality whilst I'm on the road. So thanks for watching. I will come back next week. See ya.